think about some of your favorite science fiction movies and television shows where the hero has to work with some kind of interface on their spaceship or rover or things like that. And they're beeping and they're booping on the control panel, and then the spacecraft is doing something. Well, somebody had to design and build those interfaces. And my guest today is a person who has done many of the interfaces that you are going to be familiar with. His name is Marty Romances. He is a co-founder at Territory Studio, and he and his team worked on a lot of the visual effects for so many movies and television shows that you are familiar with. The one that you will probably be most familiar with is The Martian, with all of the interfaces with the Hermes, with the on the rover, back at Mission Control, he also worked on Ad Astra, but has also been working on actual NASA interfaces, helping them to be able to present their information on the web, but also give ways for astronauts to be able to control these devices. And so we have a fascinating conversation about how these are developed, how this you get this feedback loop between practical experience and science fiction and movies and television, and then back around to building these things in the real world. So enjoy this conversation with Marty Romances. Marty, the movie that you've worked on that I'm sure my audience is most familiar with is The Martian. When we watch The Martian and now we're watching for your influence, what should we be paying attention for?
The Martian, thanks to Ridley Scott, who is a great director we work with in our first film 15 years ago, which was Prometheus, somehow also relevant to space.
Is that 15 years ago? Oh, man.
Well, yeah, I know, right? I think Martian was around 12 now, but
yeah.
So the most relevant thing there is that Ridley wanted us to design these interfaces for, NASA in 50 years, especially for Mars relevant missions, in a way that if an engineer goes to the cinema doesn't cringe on the graphics and the interfaces and all of the technology they're using. And that's why, and that's one of my favorite projects in my life, was The Martian, because they connected us with Dave Lavery team at JPL. He was director for Mars operations. He put the Mars rover up there. We were back in London back then. I'm now in San Francisco with our expansion in the company. But back in San Francisco, we were waking up very early to talk with JPL and to ask questions. Why this is like that? We looked at this widget from some research. What does that do? Can we talk with your engineers? We were building all of these systems for a film. We knew that they were never meant to be developed, but we wanted to do it in a way that was respectful to how things actually work and pretty accurate. What we do for films in these graphics sometimes is helping graphics tell a story to a broader audience, an audience that might not know, they might not be too technical or too savvy in that matter. This audience needs to understand the story we want to tell. If we tell these guys are going from A to B, all of the audience will understand that. If we have an A and a B and a line that's tracing, like that design is worth 5 minutes of two very expensive actors talking about how they're going to go from A to B. That's how these directors use us. And that's through designs and animations that we put in these different films. That's how we use our skill sets, other than wall building that wall. But the most exciting part was, trying to be accurate, yet doing this for the movies,
Yeah. I'm thinking about The Martian and the times when Mark Watney is sitting in the Mars rover and he's punching at the controls, or they're in the Hermes and they're looking at various the state of the ship and pressure and speed and things like that. Did the actors know what buttons they were going to be pressing in advance, or were you compositing this afterwards onto, a green screen fake control panel?
No, we actually love to create these graphics on set. Not only we do love it, but the director of photography also loves it, because you know, these are screens and these sets that are usually very tight. They emit some light. They create a good atmosphere when you have the hand about to touch the screen. The light is sort of the light hue and the colors are affecting the skin of the talent. And also the talent gets to believe more where they are. And some of those are interactive. We build those in a way that the actor can press certain button for triggering a certain action on that sequence or that shot. Others are just like they're moving, faking a situation, but as accurate as we can when it comes to a launch or an angle or a tipping or things that happen in the rover. All of the screens are in front of Matt Damon or whoever the actor is, and we believe they really help their performance.
Oh, it's really interesting. I wouldn't have thought that was the way to go because you'd want to sort of after the fact, but I guess I can see why that works that way. So, and so like, what else did you work on The Martian? Was it just those interfaces or were there other CG effects?
No, for The Martian, the main thing was, you know, all technology shown in the film needs to be designed. So the design for JPL was different. The design from Mission Control, NASA Mission Control, which was actually three massive LED displays. Like when you see the big film, all of that is not post-production, it's not green screen. Those are actually there happening. We had like 120 bullpen type of units, laptops, you know, all of that happening in Earth. Up in Mars, we had different sets, like the Mars habitat where he works around every single screen that shows the storms coming or whatnot. We also had the Hermes, as you mentioned, with a completely different style, very, very much, way more like dry and focused on telemetry. We had the MAV, the Mars Ascent Vehicle, which had a completely different style. The rover screens, those ones that he's punching, those four screens had like a more militaristic style. Each of these sets had a different design, and every single screen that you see in that film, that's kind of was our focus for months after doing our research and you know, working with our directors and production designers and whatnot.
Yeah, I have a lot of experience in project managing interfaces, but you know, before I was a space journalist, I built websites, or I was a project manager for web development, and so we would go through this very complicated UI process where we would do paper prototypes, and we'd be like, okay, now, you know, put a piece of paper down, now press the button, okay, now what, you know, this screen shows up, and then what do you want to do here, and then they would press the piece of paper, and then we would bring the next thing over, and then you'd come back around and you'd build an interface that was just, you know, wireframe, and then they could go through all the functionality, and then when they were finally happy with everything going, then we would make the thing. But then if they ever made a change, then you'd like, oh, you go back, and it was excruciating to make the changes after the fact, and so you had to get really good at drawing out all of the requirements from the user first early on. And I can just imagine, you know, if you've got these giant television screens, you've got all of these things, all the bullpens, you've got all of these screens that people are using in the spaceship, and on the, you've got to get the, and each one require, you know, they're very fancy, and so you've got to get that flow locked in.
Well, Here's the thing, the best part of all of the work we do with movies is that in a way we always have user experience in mind, as in how will they be using it. But we know that we won't have to develop this as an application that actually works.
It doesn't actually do a re-entry burn. Yeah.
We do the more creative side, less of development. As we evolve as a company, we are now definitely developing tools and all of that, right? But back in The Martian, everything we had to do, we sometimes program things that, like a keyboard, that no matter what the actor is typing, we're going to have the right code for Ex Machina. We did that, right? Like, it's a programmer, or like in this case, for when Mark Watney is sending a message back, like, we don't want the actor to have to feel like they have to type the exact scripted notes or email, right? So we do some of these more programming, interactive programming to help and aid the talent. But yeah, we just, in this case for NASA, the main challenge, you know what it was? We all have seen Mission Control is a mix, is a very function first approach, as it should, where we see technologies and widgets that have been there for years, others that were designed 2 weeks ago. There was no consistency on, you know, or no order to the chaos. So what we did was understand what every single widget and window is doing and organize it and apply a lever, like a level of design, a layer of design and taste and organize that chaos a little bit and think about what they will need, UX, all of that. And we cleaned up what looks like a very messy a range of widgets that only they understand for a very clean and design focus a range of widgets that not only they could understand, but also the audience can understand. And the most interesting part is that we did see throughout the years a pendulum effect on, you know, we understand NASA back then was thinking like, we don't care much about the design of this interface. We care about the function and that needs to do what needs to do. But there's been a pendulum effect that after they've seen some of our work, they say, well, there's a value on keeping things visually more organized because then we're faster to flag where their issue is or where, you know, so it's been, we kind of have gone full circle all the way to when we talk with NASA and work with NASA in the past, they still reference that as a very good visual reference of what they are after. So
that's it. That's funny. So hopefully in the future, when we do see the first humans going to Mars, they'll be using your interface.
Love, I mean, will be great. We, as I was saying, we have talks with Artemis 3 missions and we have helped them with different interfaces for satellite control and whatnot in the past. So in a way, it's already happening. The circle has reached full circle and it's closing, right? We see how Hollywood definitely is influencing directly.
I mean, you think about some of the modern spacecraft like Crew Dragon, it has big screens. It doesn't have all of the flips and dials and switches that you saw in the Apollo era where everything was very physical. Now things are being compressed and being made available on these screens. Do you sort of have an opinion? Like, do you miss, like when you think about those futuristic spaceship interfaces, do you miss people being able to flick toggles on and off versus, you know, pressing a screen?
Yeah, 100%. I always say there's like, we don't have to be doing things for the sake of it, as in if this is not going to augment the user experience or improve the user experience, do not get rid of physical interactions that, you know, where you, your own haptics and everything makes sense. Then we have a lot of experience for the last 8 years. We've been designing a lot of real interfaces for cars and automotive and aerospace have been our focus when we develop actual functional user interfaces. And what we've seen with cars is that the screens kept getting larger and we started getting rid of things that the driver is very used to in a center control, whatever is like the vents, how to move the vents to kind of reach the cabin, air vents, or even like normal switches. Those are being now, what they gone because where they used to have their own real estate, now there's a screen that's eating into that space. So we've been forced to then find different UX solutions to make some of those physical interactions digital. But with time, you also kind of have to learn from your customer and what they want. And even if, you know, digital and interact, well, different ways to interact with the sort of a human machine interface or interaction, while it could be done digitally, that doesn't mean like sometimes it's the best answer for mm-hmm. it. And
yeah, I really sort of get a little, like there's this balance. Like I want to be able to have physical knobs and things to be able to, where that I can just, you know, I'm using them all the time and I know where they are and my hands are close to them and I'm able to turn signals and windshield washers and that kind of thing. And then if I'm stopped or, you know, I need something more complicated, then there's, I bet we kind of went too far and now we're kind of coming back to find this more, you know, better balance between what should be on a screen and what should be a physical knob.
What we've seen is that sometimes one control can operate many different things. One physical control, we've seen a lot in cars, like a round knob that can be pressed or rotated or give almost as a mouse, right? And that helps a lot, kind of solve that issue. The digital interface is more a visualization of what you're doing, not necessarily you have to touch the screen, but you have something that you're more familiar with that offers haptic feedback and all of that, and use that as an in-between the machine and the interface and the human, of course. But we have seen quite a lot of great promise from that goes all the way to neural, you know, things that maybe bypassing that physical connection or dependency ends up in a positive. And I'm talking about, like, again, neural connection, as in only just thinking what you want, not even having to go through your arm, hand, fingers, and operating anything. At that point, yes, it makes sense, or starts to make more sense that we eliminate more friction than what we know as of today.
I'd like to shift gears and chat about VAST, which is this space station concept. We've reported on it quite a few times on Universe Today and here on the channel. What did they have you do for that project?
Yeah, VAST was it's one of probably our favorite relationships, active relationships we have. It came from good friends here in San Francisco, this agency called Manual. Manual is run by very, very talented, creative people that focus on branding and, like, everything, the whole branding and proposition, from graphics to website, the logo, everything. They were talking with them, and VAST was suggesting to them that they would like to do some videos to show what this will look like when it's done. And so Manuel know about what we do and our history with Hollywood and all of these sort of visual effects and visualizations. And so they connect us with VAST, and the brief basically was, we want to visualize the interior of these modules that are going to be focused on, like, new International Space Station, as the old one is being decommissioned, offering not only scientists, but also, like, the first version of a space hotel or a space tourism. We want to show the world what we're building here, and we want to show it in a way that is photorealistic. So we need someone that comes from Hollywood that has done this before and help us send that message. So by then, that's Q2 last year, 2024, we discussed with them, we storyboard the whole, you know, some of these living holes, some of these moments to show, almost a moment in time, in a particular time when someone is exercising, someone is looking through a window inside of the vessel. But then they had another company also doing some exterior rendering of the, you know, of Haven 2. Then what we did after storyboarding everything, we went to Los Angeles, where we shot a bunch of actors suspended with, you know, wires and everything on a green screen. We shot everything as we planned it. And then in post-production, we removed all the green screen, all of the wires, and we started adding our work, which was recreating for a realistic way the interior of Haven 2. And even recreating hairs, because gravity or a necklace floating, all of that, right? So, and that was our first project, and it was very successful. It helped them for a variety of reasons, in conventions and whatnot. They even printed some of our frames big in their booth in conventions. And that the relationship started there. After that, we started creating other material, like real-time visualizations for their website, new videos, and then also took over all of the exterior renders as well. And as we speak, we are shooting in LA next week, in 4 days, like more people floating and more specifics that they want to show people that have questions what this will look like.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting concept, and I'm sure at this point Anton has been putting up video clips of it, but how you've got this very modular space station design where you've got the central hub and then you've got these separate space station modules that can connect off in four directions, and you can just connect more and more of them as you go, fitting within existing rocket fairings. Like, it's all like, none of this is giant rotating space stations made of starships and things like that. It's a fairly conservative approach to building a private space station. But so from your perspective, trying to actually recreate what this is going to look like, you know, do they give you, say, engineering drawings or that you can then bring into your modeling software? How's that pipeline work?
Yeah, we definitely got lots of CAD data from their team. Not only that, but references of materials, like even physical materials. You know, we've been close to them. We were able to kind of identify what type of leather, or like even the tone and the warmth of the light and how the light changes, and all of these. We had to learn everything from the physical point, because we're trying to recreate then this in 3D, right? We're recreating all of the lighting, all of the materials, all of the behaviors of certain things, to the point of even learning what's inside of each cubicle and how, you know, if we open that, is there a metal box inside? How does that open? We had to go through all of these learnings, and they were incredible by just basically opening all of the things that they're doing for us to understand it and recreate it.
As a sort of visual artist, what are some of the challenges of attempting to sort of show these environments that are real, but we don't really have a direct, people can't haven't experienced it personally, and you're trying to sort of convey what this is like?
I think the main one, of course, is gravity. And, the main challenge is knowing that if we could shoot in zero G, or we could have like the budget to go into shooting lots of these things in green screen, but still having a real physical behavior of this talent and whatnot, that will be helpful, but very expensive. So instead, what we need to do is recreate with camera movements, with wires, people suspended up in the air. And as I was saying, recreating things that in zero G will make sense. And that comes from, as I was saying, hair, any type of jewelry, everything. Then also is the challenge of understanding and putting yourself in the mindset of being up there, and how, even if they have done so much testing and they tell us why there's a handle here and why this tablet might be able to be rotating for us, we also need to absorb all of that, and even refraction of light, where the light comes from, is this accurate? Like, we never want to be inaccurate when someone's looking through a window and see Earth. Like, we don't want to be showing light coming from the wrong side of things and whatnot. But also recreating like where the cycle of light in this case is completely different. So you go through different cycles. So understanding all of that, understanding even there were shots on a gym that they were built, or like some sort of a more physics like sort of a reactions and whatnot of materials that are more elastic. And so understanding why we need to make sure that this, you know, in this case, on a bench press, or not on a bench press, but like on an exercise module, the feet need to be under like a certain latch to not, you know, to go up. All of these details sounds like obvious when, if you were up there, but if you're not, you cannot miss out on these little details. There are shots where someone is taking a box, and if you look at it, you will see the specific latch on the feet that we had to recreate in 3D, or how they sleep. They're sleeping backs, right? They are more vertical than not a typical horizontal sleeping. So it's all of these details that are challenging, and we have to prepare everything prior to even shooting the actors, because we want to make sure this is accurate. So the pre-production is intense. Production is intense because you have, you know, people on wires, and the post-production is intense as well because you're recreating something that doesn't exist and needs to be looking for a realistic. But this is kind of what we do for many, many films as well. So
yeah, I think about things like when people are like, people have attempted to simulate, say, a spacecraft that has some kind of rotating section in it. You had that with the Hermes, 2001, you had the big wheel that was spinning. We've seen it on Babylon 5 and a couple of other shows as well. And the thing that they don't get right is the Coriolis effect, the fact that you are experiencing a different force at your feet than you are at your head. And so things don't work right. Like if you try to pour yourself a cup of coffee, you actually have to aim it a little off because the way the liquid is going to flow. And I think, you know, there's a lot of these, those details that are like next level. It's, you know, once you've set up some kind of artificial gravity, it's really easy. Now you can just pretend like you're in gravity and you don't have to worry about it. But actually, the environment, depending on the radius of the station, is actually going to behave a little bizarrely. And I don't think people are prepared. Or you think about people being on Mars. You know, you are still in 1/3 Earth gravity. And so your hair is going to move a little differently. You're going to get off of, you know, you're going to stand up or go down ladders or things like that. And it's going to be a little bit off. Like I've been watching For All Mankind. And they're on the moon, and yet they're not on the moon because the 1/6 gravity, like things would just work differently. And you'd have to, someone has to think every single interaction by the actors with the set and the way they move and the way their clothing moves. Like if you want to be realistic about it, it's just next level and we can't do it. So I think, you know, did you pitch letting you guys all go up to orbit to shoot the...
Oh, we would love to. We know it's very... Yeah, it's probably not the best use of the budget for a production like this. And there will be more important things to be doing than commercials or promotional materials. We would love to. And surely there are other solutions. But when you can do things with the computer these days, you know, it saves quite a lot. Even when... We did things with virtual production LED screens that show us an environment that looks very realistic from the camera. That those are like, this is how technology is really actually helping us get rid of the green screen sometimes. I'm hoping that one day we have a set where we can shoot that they can simulate, zero gravity or different gravity, you know, gravity force. That will be the
trick. Yeah. And I know like Disney has that big set that they use that is just covered in screens in all directions, and then they can just project wherever they are around them, and so you get the reflections onto the actors. They can much better understand the scene, the place that they're in, as opposed to just being surrounded by green. Do you think that you know, is that having a real positive benefit on
100%.
Visual effects?
Yeah, big time. The money spent on sometimes removing things or removing the green screen. The green screen also has like always like that green spill. There's no light coming from a green screen, right? Like virtual production, which are those LED sets where you can recreate a space. They help a lot integrating. It saves a lot of money in the post-production, you know, like millions and millions in visual effects are just to kind of change these things. And like, If you can avoid that by just shooting it already with a physical property that's giving you the right light, the right background, these animations or environments are synced with the camera. So if the camera is moving, you get the perfect parallax. It has been pretty good to also not have to go to, like I remember with the Martian, when they were going to Jordan, in the desert, right? For like, talking with production, like the war, like, the amount of issues they had with some of the big machinery, like the rover, like as a set production to go all the way to Jordan to shoot that. That's crazy. Nowadays, you can, if you want that Mars rover in your set and you have like that LED and you can just project Jordan out in that screen, you save quite a lot of money and actually a lot of friction with time, not just money, but time too. It takes quite a lot to go to certain locations. And nowadays you can find very good solutions with these LED backgrounds.
And so what kinds of technology are you keeping your eye on that's going to have a role in the future, do you think?
Well, it really depends on which industry we're talking, but I think...
visual effects in making our movies better, making our TV shows better.
We've seen quite a lot of good process with AI in terms of like how artificial intelligence can help us not create, because we believe like the creators ourselves, still want to maintain like that original design and like the back and forth with the director and understanding everything. But AI has been helping a lot when it comes to accelerating processes from rendering times on big, large format visual effects to simulations. Most recently, we work a lot with neural radiance fields, which basically is identifying from an image captured by a camera or even in a video. You could have, these are called nerves. You can have a nerve per frame. So if you have a 24 frames per second, you will have 24 like nerves per second. And what these neural radiance fields do is they analyze how every single sort of a pixel, they will analyze if this is wood, and they will analyze where the light comes from and how this wood will refract the light, and will that basically is studying the fields of light, allow us to kind of have a scan, almost like photogrammetry, like a pretty accurate scan of the 3D space that could be, seen in real life, in real time. That's been really helpful when recreating sets or having, wanting to have a scan of the set. That's very helpful when you look to work in new mediums, like immersive mediums such as a Vision Pro or a Quest. And if something has been shot in a stereoscopic, that's great. But if something has been shot with neural radiance fields in mind, we could be recreating all of these and you could be right in it. You could be right where the camera was and look around as the film. To me, that is where I see a lot of like pretty much an exponential growth on innovation that's going to start hitting all of us maybe in a year or two, where we can, instead of watching or, a film or a TV show through a frame like we are so used to, we can put a headset and be part of the set, be and see all of these things happening. Now, of course, there are lots of challenges, which is motion sickness and whatnot. But when you have enough accuracy, high frame rate, a stereoscopic, when you kind of really recreate the way that we interpret in a very photorealistic way, then motion sickness gets reduced quite a lot. We're excited about this. We're excited about levels of autonomy. We've been working a lot with a variety of levels of autonomy, not only for cars, but now for airspace, from all sorts of departments, but Department of Defense, of course, being one. We have seen a lot of advancements thanks to AI, hopefully, like that. I think this is goes hand by hand. Autonomy is thanks to machine learning. And we, for these 8 years, working with the EV like vehicles that we work with, some of them being fully autonomous. What this allows us, in my opinion, is to remove a lot of these screens and real estate, because there's no need for maybe a steering wheel. There's no need for like controlling everything. And we've done a project with Audi where we, instead of having all of these, we just had an augmented reality experience where you have these widgets floating wherever you want in the car. And we developed that. Actually, it works, right? And to me, augmented reality or mixed reality, when it gets to a good point, combined with different levels of autonomy, can be very disruptive to in many ways. And even in space, being able to have fully automated vessels without humans in it, operating them, having robotics and artificial intelligence and levels of autonomy combined with space exploration can also exponentially accelerate, our knowledge. And that, yeah, those things probably are like, if I had to choose some, like, those are like, well, the ones that are exciting us the most and the ones that we work very close with. So,
yeah. I've got a Quest like in my background right there. And yeah, like I can't wait for that day when you can have some kind of heads up display for the real world that I can fix my car and it's got, you know, it's highlighting the parts of the car that I need to remove next and giving me instructions. And like, that's all interface. Like you can imagine, how do you in real time try to provide additional information about these real world objects, which because they don't have UI by default, in a way that is understandable and yet isn't kind of filling up your field of view. Like I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of years, the vast majority of the user interface work that's being done is just to help this augmented reality to be able to have it functionally helpful, but not feel like overwhelming glitter that's assaulting your senses. And I think that's going to be the balance.
Right. We in that Audi project, we developed a tutorial for how to mount the bikes at the back of the car, like a bike mounting rack. We used augmented reality showing overlays on top of the rack, the physical rack. I think that visual aid is going to be so important. And in a way, what we do with these projects is, as I was saying with the film, so we're trying to tell someone that is not an expert a story, right? We want to get there as fast as we can, thanks to a universal language, which is design. So I think the same thing that we do for the film industry, which is telling the stories with all of these graphics to Aurora audience, that everyone needs to understand it. We're also doing it with these, with cars, with the EV acceleration. We've been working with lots of EV because there are new UX paradigms. There are new stories. This car now is, you're telling me it's parking by itself. How is it going to do that? Like you need to kind of create that connection between the machine, also a machine that lost vibration, sound of an engine, lost like the connection. Now everything is like quiet, nothing vibrates, nothing. There's no noise. So you have to still build a connection with the human inside of the machine. And with what we do with EVs is exactly the same. Well, if we do it, we need to do it for anyone that wants to hire this car today, right? So everyone needs to understand it. So the designs need to be very thought through, the user experience, all of the logics that we think need to be also very thought through. I think that applies also to all of these new augmented reality things that we are developing these days. And it's going to get very exciting. Yeah.
So if people are like going to the movies, watching television, driving cars, I guess, working for NASA, but what should they be keeping an eye out that is what's something that you built that's coming up?
Most recent, we've been working with Dune 1, 2 and the new TV show, Dune Prophecy, like if you see any holograms and everything.
Oh, yeah.
We work constantly with Marvel, all of the Marvel universe, all of the technology that they use, which this is another part that's really interesting for all of the work we did for Star Wars, Marvel, whatnot. We're hoping that in the same way that Minority Report influenced like multi-gesture in touchscreens or, you know, the pinching, and we hope that all of the stuff that we do in Hollywood somehow also influence not only our own teams to kind of do something different when it comes to real functional user interfaces, but that also influence other type of creators out there. But yeah, if you were talking about the Quest 3, we finished the Batman VR game cinematics for that. So if you play that game, you will see some dream sequences and some transitions and some cinematics that are very immersive. That's stuff that we've been doing. I mean, we have over 200 people, 5 different offices. Is a nonstop. Is like every single quarter we do a show and tell, and we're all wowed on like the amount of different things that we're doing. But the important part for me is that we keep that diversification. I do always, you know, I've always believed in how important it is to not just do one thing. I think just doing one thing narrows your field of view quite a lot. We have teams that, or artists, or you know, engineers that one day they will be working on this video game. Then 2 months after, they're working on this car interface. In 3 months, they will be working on set in a film or working a visual effects pipeline for these holograms. And then they will be doing an augmented reality experience for Mercedes or Audi or Hyundai. Or there's like so many different influences that that I think they pick from one industry and bring to another. That's what makes us slightly different to many other companies, because you have many companies that only do film graphics or visual effects. That's all they do, though. Others, they only do car interfaces. That's their business model. They don't do anything else other than that, or, you know, VR games, whatever it is. For me, the important part that maybe allowed us to keep a high competitive edge among some of our competitors is that we are going to give you more sometimes novel creations, novel ideas that you can own as our client, because they come informed and infused by all of the variety of activity that happens in our creative studios. And there's a lot of value on that. And I think like it forces us to kind of have that very wide field of view and come up with this, like happy mistakes or happy accidents. It's like, whoa, we use something that to visualize these in a way that no one else has done it before. And surely if we didn't have the influence from other industries, we probably wouldn't get to that connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Marty, it's been fascinating chatting with you. And now I'm going to keep a very close eye on the interfaces and stuff that I see in the upcoming video games, movies, television shows, and NASA spacecraft that I fly. Thanks.
If you played Starfield, also we did all the concept screens for that video game as well from Bethesda. If you like,
I'm waiting for it to go on a Steam sale, I think.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Marty Romances. I'll give you some final thoughts. But first, I'd like to thank our patrons. Thanks to Abe Kingston, Andrew Gross, Barely Roofing, Brian Bodie, Keredwin, Chuck Hawkins, Commander Baylock, Cy Nelson, David Giltana, David Matz, Dustin Cable, Evan Perot, Greg Feely, Hens Schultz, Hudson Moore, Jay Graves, James Clark, Jeremy Madden, Jim Burke, Jordan Young, Josh Schultz, Marcel Smits, Michael Purcell, Mazzo, Paul Robach, Ren Kaidu, Robeck, Sean Sargent, Stephen Fowler Munley, Vlad Shiplin, and Wolfgang Klotz, who support us at the Master of the Universe level, and all our patrons. All your support means the universe to us. Like many of you, I was very influenced by science fiction. I would say that like watching Star Trek got me really interested in space, astronomy, space exploration. And yet, you know, when you think about how they are practically living their lives and interacting with the spaceship and the computers and the devices that they have around them, and then you see, fast forward, here we are, and we have communicators and various things that were predicted by science fiction. These things have come to life. And so maybe when we see the interfaces of the future for the giant rotating space stations and so on, we can imagine how that stuff will actually play out into the future. And it's so interesting, that influence back and forth. So I hope you enjoyed this sort of behind the scenes look at how this all comes together. All right, we'll see you next time.